Welcome to episode 83 of Practical Defense, Apartment Safety. Welcome to the Practical Defense Podcast, where you'll learn practical approaches to staying safe in our increasingly dangerous urban environments. I'm your host, Alex Haddix. This week, our subject is apartment safety. Two listeners requested this subject over the past few weeks, so I felt compelled to cover it. I've been getting a lot of emails, which is fantastic, so I'll run a mailbag episode pretty soon to cover some of the best ones. But before we jump into the topic, I have a few announcements. I've posted information on the firearms courses I'll be teaching to my website. They're Basic Pistol, First Steps Pistol Orientation, and Personal Protection in the Home. These are all NRA courses, and I have a full description of each in the training section. I also have a 2-hour crime survival seminar coming up at the end of the month. It's on Saturday, July 25th, and I hope to see everyone there. I want to welcome our new listeners from the Gun Rights Radio Network. I've seen a nice bump in the numbers of the downloads, so I know you guys are listening, so welcome to the show. I also want to send out another special thanks to Tony Brown of the Firearms Cafe for nomming me to join the GRRN. You can find Tony's show on gunrightsradio.com or search for it with your podcaster of choice, you know, iTunes or Zune Marketplace. I'm doing something interesting with my personal training. I'm starting to train in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, specifically Gracie Combatives. Now, there are a lot of challenges living in a big city like Los Angeles, but one of the benefits is that you have access to some amazing resources. You know, I've trained under some world-renowned masters in several styles, and now I have another opportunity that I just can't pass up, so I'm taking advantage of it. Although I'm not training directly under the Gracies, I just can't make that drive every day, I will test in front of them. I've never done any long-term training in grappling, so this will be a new experience for me, and I'm really excited about it. I won't be training exclusively in BJJ, so my progress will be slowed a little bit, but it should still be a lot of fun. I also have a correction to an earlier episode. Now, this correction comes from Daniel in Florida, who's also a former U.S. Marine Corps sergeant. His email was long, so I'll just jump to the section with a correction. And this is in reference to episode 77, where I covered terrorism survival tips and touched upon concealed carry. He writes, "The second thing I wanted to write about was something you said about carrying a firearm. In episode 77, you said, if the place of worship, business or private, forbids firearms or any type of weapon, then it becomes illegal to have them on the premises, even if you have a state carry concealed permit. All it takes is one sign to say no firearms on premises, and as a civilian you can't carry there despite how much paper you have or certifications you can produce. I understand the point you're making, private property is still private property, and the owner can decide who what is allowed on his or her property. Of course I agree with that, but your statement is slightly inaccurate. Now, I'm not a lawyer, just a responsible citizen who has done my own research. Some states may allow signs that meet certain criteria to carry the weight of the law, in effect making the sign the only requirement to restrict weapons, but not all states. Being in Florida, signs do not carry the weight of the law in this case. An actual person has to ask someone carrying concealed to leave, assuming they're even aware that the person is carrying concealed. If the person who's carrying concealed doesn't immediately comply, meaning no waiting for friends or family, making final purchases, etc., then it is considered armed trespass, but not until then. Of course, the law, FS 790.06 parentheses 12, does not specifically prohibit carrying in certain areas in addition to those prohibited by federal law, but anything not on that list is legal, regardless of signs. Minnesota law, on the other hand, gives signs that meet the specific requirements, letter size, area of display, verbiage, etc., to carry the weight of the law, but those that don't conform are not enforceable. Some businesses place incorrect signs up to avert the fears of those opposed to firearms while still allowing concealed carry on their property. Since responsible gun owners will be familiar with the law and those opposed to firearms generally don't know anything about the laws regarding firearms." I really appreciate your email, Daniel. I always welcome comments and corrections. What you bring up is a perfect example of why concealed carry is not something to be taken lightly and can be really confusing. Every state has different laws and regulations regarding concealed carry. There is no federal standard, and that makes it really hard. In addition to the huge responsibility associated with legally carrying a firearm and the decision whether or not to use it, you need to navigate the local laws to steer clear of legal trouble, even if your intentions are true and honest. In that episode, I made broad statements regarding concealed carry, knowing that they did not specifically apply to every state and every variation of regional law. I'm also a multi-state concealed carry license holder. The point I was trying to make is that regardless of what the law gives you the rights to do, you should follow the request of the property owner. If I see a sign that says, no guns, I'm not going to carry there. That sign tells me I'm not wanted and I'll take my business elsewhere. That's a choice of the business or property owner and you should respect it. I will respect the intent of the sign rather than argue with the local police that the sign doesn't meet the legal display requirements because the sign's rectangular rather than diamond shape or that the font size is 2 points off. Also, as Daniel pointed out, if you're asked to leave and you don't, it can become armed trespass. Now, my home state of California is openly hostile to firearms of any type for any purpose. Even trying to transport my pistol to the firing range is a chore. Every expert has a different opinion on how the firearm needs to be secured during transport. Every police officer I've spoken with about it has given me different and often conflicting information. If you purchase ammunition within Los Angeles city limits, they fingerprint you, and there's pending legislation to make that a state law. And part of that bill will also make it illegal to purchase ammo over the internet and to even privately transfer 50 rounds of ammunition to anyone in a month's time. So, if I'm out bird hunting with my brother-in-law, and he runs out of shells, and I give him a box, that's 25 right there. Then, later in the month, say we're at the range, and I give him another box of 25, that's it for the month. That's my 50. If I give him one more round, I will have broken a state law. Ammunition can get expensive, so it's cheaper to buy in bulk. And often, people like my family will split a case. If this bill becomes law, then we'll no longer be able to do that. All right, we'll be back and back on topic with our discussion of apartment safety. Welcome back. I received two emails asking for an episode on apartment safety and tips on selecting an apartment. Now, to start, the term apartment can mean different things to different people, so here are some other terms that you might be more familiar with. Condominium, apartment, either rental or own, duplex, townhouse, flat, and so on. For this episode, I'm going to use the term apartment for any living space in a common building. And I'm going to read the emails. The first one's from Eric, and he doesn't say where he's from. He writes, "First, I've been listening to your show from the beginning, and I have adopted many of your tips. All of your podcasts are interesting, and I try to tell my family and friends your tips about prevention and awareness." Well, thanks, Eric. "I was wondering if you could do a show on apartment safety. I live in a three-story apartment that probably has 60 apartments in the building. There are two front entrances and six back entrances, and they all have a common key to get in. The apartment door has two different keys to get in also. I've noticed that our door frame has a crack near the latch, and the door has a lot of wiggle room in it. There's a deadbolt and a chain on the door, too. Is there anything I can do to improve my situation? The door just seems really flimsy. I make a habit of walking around the apartment building before I go to sleep to shut all the doors that the people leave propped open and have put up flyers, with the apartment manager's permission, warning people of leaving the outside doors open at night. I appreciate you reading my email and look forward to what you have to say." And here's the other email from John in New York. He writes, "I'm moving to the Los Angeles area from New York City and have two podcast topic suggestions that might help me pick a place to live. I've listened to all six of your podcasts on home security and have found them very helpful. Are there any tips for the actual picking of an apartment? For instance, I'm avoid looking near on or off ramps to freeways. I'm also avoiding touristy areas that may attract petty thief activity. Because I'm from the East Coast, when I visit to look at potential apartments, I will not have a lot of time. Therefore, I'm afraid I may overlook some obvious safety or home security issues, particularly those related to the physical location and immediate surroundings, things that can't be corrected once I sign a lease. My second podcast question is way more simple. Are there any safety and security protocols that people from the East Coast, New York City, fall into when they move out to LA? I know the lack of people walking around there is actually scary to me at night. In New York City, there are always people walking around. I know it may be a false sense of security, but we New Yorkers think as long as there are would-be witnesses, we feel safe, even though most of those witnesses do exactly that, witness and nothing else. Thanks, and I really learned from your podcasts. I'm making them required listening for my girlfriend before we move out to LA." Thanks for writing in, guys. You both bring up some really great questions, and I hope my suggestions help you out. The greatest security risk with shared spaces is that security becomes a shared responsibility. As Eric pointed out, other residents leave security doors open, which puts everyone in the building at risk. All it takes is one idiot to leave one opportunity for a burglar to get in and for someone to get hurt. I've lived in both rental apartments and owned condominiums, and I've found that owners are far keener to security than renters. When you own something, you're far more likely to treat it better than someone renting. For example, do you treat a rental car with the same care as you treat your own? The same applies to living spaces. Flyers and awareness is a good start, and it might help. The problem with a population as large as 60 apartments is that there will always be idiots. I think back to episode 35, where I covered identity theft. My father, my mother, and I all suffered a serious breach of security when one idiot had his laptop stolen that contained the personal information of 26.5 million veterans. One person put 26.5 million people's financial and personal security at risk. So the safest thing to do is assume that robbers will be walking the halls and look to your personal space and secure it as best you can. Review all entry points, including windows, not just the doors. Do the balconies connect? If not, is the space between them close enough for a person to jump across? If you feel the door is not secure enough or the lock is faulty, submit a complaint in writing. Putting it in writing makes it formal and traceable. Now be certain to include words and phrases like safety risk and security risk in there. Both types of those things will always get the attention of management and attorneys. If you identified a specific risk in writing and management did nothing to address it in a timely manner, and if something happens to you, then they're on the hook. Always keep a copy of the letter for yourself. Now, what you want to do is you do not want to make the letter aggressive or threatening. Always be polite and be specific. Include photos if you can. Just say that you'd like to bring the following items to their attention, they put you at risk, and request that they be addressed. Leave it at that and see what happens, and then move on from there. Ask for the locks to be re-keyed when you move in. Key stamped, do not duplicate, are a joke and can't be trusted. If management says it's too expensive, offer to cover the cost. And again, put it in writing. Never forget that you have no idea who occupied the space before you. Now, I once had three bounty hunters show up on my doorstep looking for someone who lived at my address a few years earlier. That was not a fun experience. You can also install non-invasive alarm systems. Alarm.com has a system made by General Electric that's 100% wireless, and you can take it with you when you move. Even the connection to the monitoring center is via digital cell phone. You can even self-install to keep the cost down. Check it out and other competing systems to see if you can find something that matches your budget. Now, in his email, John brings up a couple of good suggestions when selecting an apartment. Avoid buildings near freeways. The reason for this is that freeways are escape routes for criminals. After committing a crime, they want to put as much space between them and the crime scene as possible, and the best route is the freeway or highway. One of the police responses to a robbery is to hit the nearest freeway and check every speeder to see if the vehicle matches the description of the criminal's getaway car. And you want to avoid touristy areas that attract petty theft. And I'll add here a few other items that you should look for. Avoid buildings near high schools. Now, with no offense to the teenage listeners out there, high schoolers are, for the most part, brain damaged. Teenagers think that they're superheroes and incapable of being hurt or caught, and petty crime tends to be higher in areas that are immediately around high schools. Car break-ins for like stolen stereos, smash and grabs, and I've lost DVDs from kids going through my mail and taking out the movies right out of my mailbox. Do they ever consider that tampering with the U.S. mail is a federal crime and punishable by imprisonment? No, of course not. They're stupid teenagers. Also, in Los Angeles, there's a gang issue that sometimes comes along with high schools. The Los Angeles Unified School District implemented a plan a few decades ago to diversify the city. The goal was to mix the population of the districts to expand awareness and build community. Kids from underprivileged neighborhoods were bused to schools in high-income neighborhoods to expose them to better living conditions, and vice versa. One of the unintended consequences of the system was that it spread gangs across the city and sometimes put rival gangs in the same school. Nice, eh? I lived in a really nice neighborhood for a couple of years. I was 8 blocks from the police station and 12 blocks from the fire station. I was also 6 blocks from a high school. One year, during the high school graduation, a gang fight broke out. We had helicopters flying over, and I heard gunfire all night long. One round even ricocheted off my third-story bedroom balcony. The property value in this neighborhood was $750,000. The homes were worth $750,000, and I had bullets bouncing off my balcony. Needless to say, I moved within 3 months. Other locations you should try to avoid are ones near convenience stores, fast food restaurants, and gas stations, especially the ones that are open up late. These just bring in the wrong type of crowd at night, and you don't want them near your home. You want to try to avoid buildings that are on a main boulevard. Now, these are high-traffic areas which bring a lot of eyes on your building and make it convenient for folks walking around on the street to check out and inspect. What you want is to look for buildings that are a few blocks in from any main boulevard. If you look at crime reports, burglaries and thefts drop off significantly 3 or more blocks in from a major street. They're not non-existent, but they're less. Which brings up another point. Many police departments make crime reports available on the web. LAPD is actually really pretty good about this. So check out the neighborhood crime statistics online. So, for the perfect apartment location, that would be away from freeway on-ramps, convenience stores, fast food restaurants, gas stations, and high schools, and 3 or more blocks in from any major street. Good luck finding that. And if you do, let me know because I'm going to move there myself. There is no perfect location. There is just way too much going on in any major city. What you have to do is just make the best selection from what's available to you. Now here are a few quick items for inside the building when you physically visit it. This only takes a minute or so when you inspect the building. How does the intercom work? Is it a separate system or does it tie into the phone system? If it ties into the phone system, be careful what you say on your telephone answer machine. A recorded message saying, "Hi, we're not home right now," to someone on your doorstep is not a good idea. Do you see any doors propped open that should be closed? How clean is it? Now this speaks to maintenance and attention to detail. Does it have video surveillance? Ask if the cameras are live and recording. Is the garage secured? Where are the elevators and stairwells? You know, stairwells are freeway on-ramps for buildings. Do the apartments have individual security systems installed? This is rare, but really nice when you find it. Also, who are the other residents? What you want to do is you want to find a family-friendly building. Now, what this does is, people with families are far more attentive to security than, say, you know, the average college student. They are also a lot quieter. So if you want a nice, quiet apartment, family-friendly buildings are a little bit better. Now, I can't really speak to the second part of John's question. I visited New York City probably 20 times, but they were all short business trips, and sometimes just even overnight. I've never lived there, and so I have no real experience with the culture. So, unfortunately, I can't really do a compare and contrast of the cultural differences and what should be avoided. What I can say is that compared to other parts of the country and other big cities where I've spent a good amount of time, Los Angeles is rude and unfriendly. People will not speak to you, they will not smile at you, and they will not say hello to strangers. The assumption here is that if someone approaches you in a public place, they want something from you or they're trying to scam you. From speaking with friends who have moved here, that's been the biggest shock for them. Well, guys, I hope that helps some. If you need clarification or have other questions, drop me another line. I'd be happy to help out.
Gun Rights Radio Network has the best pro-Second Amendment, pro-gun rights podcast available on the net. The podcasts are absolutely free when subscribing using iTunes or Zoom Marketplace. Or if you want, you can just listen from the website. Make sure you visit gunrightsradio.com to subscribe. Podcasting freedom, one episode at a time.
So in summary, we have security is the responsibility of all residents. And the challenge is getting compliance from all residents, which can sometimes just be impossible. You want to submit security concerns in writing to management and keep a copy of the letter for your own records. Rekey the locks to your door. If management won't pay for it, offer to cover the costs, and again, do this in writing. Consider installing a non-invasive alarm system. When selecting a building, consider the following options: proximity to freeway on-ramps, proximity to touristy areas, proximity to high schools, proximity to convenience stores and gas stations, proximity to fast food restaurants, proximity to major streets. Look to the internal security and layout of the building itself. Things like intercoms, video cameras, open doors, garages, and so on. And if it's your style, look for a family-friendly building that sometimes is quieter and may be a little better on security. As always, don't forget to check out my monthly column on TaekwondoTimes.com. It's called Raising Awareness. If you have any tips you'd like to share with everyone, a comment on a show, or if you'd like to suggest a topic for an upcoming episode, write into podcast@alexaddix.com. I'd love to hear from you. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe. Practical Offense is a member of the Gun Rights Radio Network at gunrightsradio.com. And that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense Podcast. For questions, commentary, and topic suggestions, send an email to podcast@alexaddix.com. That's podcast@alexhaddix.com. And if you ever want to train with me, look me up on the web at alexhaddix.com.
Music by Kevin MacLeod.